Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today I'm joined by Keith Lasley to discuss all the happenings in Scottish football at this moment in time, the world of football. It's been a bit of an uncertain time to say the least, Keith, but thank you very much for joining me today.
No bother, Andy. Always a pleasure.
Well, start off with basically yourself. How you getting on? As I say, it's been a difficult couple of weeks, a very uncertain time for all of us. I hope you and your family are doing well.
No, we are, thanks. And same for you guys as well. I've connected to the podcast and all my Liverpool fans, really, and their families. You know, it is a tough time. Yeah, but myself, it's, you know, just kind of slowly getting used to the kind of new existence of, social distancing and being apart from your friends and family. So it's difficult. I'm sure everybody's got their own challenges. But, you know, I'm lucky that we've got our families close by. We've got two young children and they're getting on with their homeschooling pretty well. So there's a lot of resource there that they can continue that. And, you know, little bits, even with, you know, my wee boys' football and things like that, you can, you know, look at some online skills and things like this. You can keep that going. And even my young girl, Carrie, her dance school have put on online tutorials and things like that for dances. So trying to keep life as normal as possible and kind of the most unnormal of circumstances. So, it's you know, a little bit of a mental challenge more than anything, but one we've just got to get on with and try and make the best of.
How's your teaching been? Have you been learning on the job?
Stressful, I think, is the first adjective I'd use. But listen, controlling... you know, a squad of first team players is far less stressful than schooling two young children, I've found in the last week. So, I'm sure the schools across the country will be the same, but actually, I think it's a really good system they've got. And, you know, I'm sure they have had to put it together in a pretty short time scale, but, they're still getting that opportunity to learn their different subjects and. You know, then they post it and upload it online. So, you know, listen, it's going as well as can be. And, just trying to strap them to the kitchen table so that they actually complete it all is the biggest challenge. But, you know, so far, so good. Listen, it's, as I said before, it's making the best of a bad situation. And they seem to still be learning. And that's the most important thing.
Obviously, we're all suffering from the lack of football and life without football. I did a bit in the weekend where I was just kind of pondering the difference to our routine and how big a part of our lives football can be. It can be such a connector. It's such a big part of our lives for all of us, whether you be involved in the playing side, the coaching side, whether you be a supporter. It's a huge void to fill, isn't it?
I think it is. You know, as you're saying, no matter what, you know, if you're directly involved in it, as you say, as a player, a coach. But I think, you know, as a supporter and something that is just about routine, something that kind of, not just going to the football on every Saturday or every whatever it is, Tuesday or Wednesday night, it's dictating your thoughts, how the previous games went, what you're looking forward to, games that, you know, are maybe further down the line. And just that excitement, having that kind of talking point, drive in your life to know what's coming up, and, you know, all the emotion that goes with following a football team. So, you know, when that gets taken away suddenly, it's a pretty big void. And I think probably this is in some ways maybe going to be a little bit of a reminder of how much people actually appreciate Scottish football. And, well, I'm sure people all over the world have an appreciation for the club that they love. But in this country, you know, I think your game takes a bit of a bashing at times, and, you know, in terms of how good a product it is. And that's obviously up for debate, as it always is. But, you know, I think what, you know, can't be taken away is how much it means to people in this country, as you say, whatever level of your involvement is. And, you know, I think if anything, I know a positive hopefully to be taken from this situation, that I think once we get further into it in weeks and months down the line, I think that appreciation for the game will grow even more. And even for somebody like myself, being, you know, the privilege to be actually be involved in it, I think that privilege again gets exaggerated, you know, when you You know, you lose it for what is going to be a sustained period of time, and you know that the you know to be involved it is a real privilege, as I say, and something I think it just does, as you say, leave such a big void. So hopefully when we get back, we might see signs of that in terms of attendances and interest in the game as a whole, because you know sometimes it takes for something to be taken away, and that feeling of kind of absence makes a heart grow fonder. And you know, hopefully that is the case with football, and you know we can see a real upturn when you know hopefully football returns sooner rather than later.
It does kind of feel a bit over dramatic given that we've only been without it for what, 2.5 weeks, nearly 3 weeks, but it's been unlike any other break, hasn't it? Like, it was there and there was a schedule completely packed with fixtures. We should have had the Euro playoffs this weekend as well, and then for it all just to be wiped out in one fell swoop, it's unlike any break that we've ever had from football before.
No, it is, and I think, you know, there's a couple of things there. I think even the stage of the season, as you say, the stage of the season that happened, if this happened, you know, in September, say, or, you know, a really early part of the season, would it still have been tough? Absolutely, of course it would have been. But I think the fact that, you could see the kind of finish line in sight, the excitement of, you know, for instance, take ourselves as a, you know, we were literally playing that night against our closest, you know, Aberdeen, 1 point behind us, under the lights at Fir Park. You know, those type of games, and the games were only going to ramp up in excitement. You know, you think once you get into the split, and then, you know, those five games after the split, which all become really cup finals, really, in terms of, you know, trying to, as we say, you know, going for European qualification. So you just feel the stage of the season, as you say, the Scotland, the stage of the qualification for the Euros, it just does seem to hit right at that point where, you know, things are really coming, the excitement's really building, and, you know, then it all gets taken away. So I think there's absolutely no doubt. I think that's, you know, exacerbated the kind of problem or the void that's been left, because, as I said, there was so much to look forward to. But listen, it's happened. We just need to try and make the best of it, and you know, when we do return, hopefully we can finish the games. I think that's obviously everybody's first choice, but we're just going to have to wait and see. And as always, first and foremost, is, you know, at this point, is the health of, you know, our players, our staff, and our fans, and everybody that's connected with Motherwell and the wider community. And you know, we look after that first, and then, you know, hopefully we get a chance with renewed kind of vigour and hope to finish these games. And you know, I'd think if we start back with a home game against Aberdeen, and, you know, at Fir Park, you know, whenever that may be, I'm pretty sure the excitement levels from both sets of fans and both clubs would be pretty high, and something to really look forward to.
It's been a while since we last caught up, and the season has continued to go well. There obviously was the dip in form round about February time, and it carried into the start of March. But the team, prior to the break, really had turned it around. An excellent victory against Ross County at Fir Park, followed up by a good point at Tynecastle. I know that Hearts are obviously bottom of the table, but there's still never an easy trip to Tynecastle, that's for sure. And came under a wee bit of a storm in the second half, and managed to hold out for the point. Could have got three in the end with the chances that we did have. How would you assess the season at this point? I've already mentioned that I feel that we have had a very good campaign. It's so frustrating that we're currently at this halt, and uncertainty around how the conclusion will play out, or if it will play out at all. But it seems, from an outsider looking in, that it has been a very positive season for Motherwell Football Club.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't, you know, things are, you know, trophies are handed out, and, you know, you know, the final way your season is looked upon is defined in May, you know, when all your games are played. But we've not managed to do that, you know, so we can only judge it up to this point. And, you know, up to this point, with whatever it is, eight games left, we're sitting in third position. So, you know, I think any Motherwell team that you sit in the summer and you do your planning, you do your recruitment, you You know, you do your pre-season training, you build your, you know, build on your culture that you've been trying to build for the last couple of years. You get as fit as you can, you get organised, and you develop as the season goes on. You know, all the things to be sitting in third position at this, you know, that stage of the season is, you know, is as good as we can hope for at Motherwell. I mean, let's be frank about that. And I think it's had its challenges along the way, but you know, no season at Motherwell is ever going to be without challenges, without maybe certain periods where you know, you have to battle through it and come out the other side. And as you say, we felt as if you know, we had done that. February and we was a tough month for us, but you know, I've said this on so many occasions. We particularly, you know, a club of our size, we've got no divine right to be sitting third in a league where, you know, I think we are, you know, playing it up against teams with, you know, as it's well documented, far, you know, bigger budgets and everything that goes with that. So, you know, it's been a fantastic effort by the players, you know, and I think on the whole, along with results, I think there have been some pretty decent performances. And as I said, you know, I think that was us qualified top six as well, officially, I think, just with the way the games went. And again, you know, for us, you know, that's real progress. And as I said, to get ourselves into a position to even be talking with, you know, 7 or 8 games to go of European qualifications is, you know, when we sat down last summer and, you know, as I said, you plan, try and plan the season ahead. That's something that we would have bitten your hand off for and been, you know, delighted about. So, you know, we're delighted with that. You know, do you always want to improve? Do you always think there is still things that you can get better at? Absolutely. And I think, you know, that will always be the case for us. You know, the manager is the one that leads that and is demanding on a daily basis that we improve. And and you know, that's what we'll continue to do. And ultimately, if we can you know, finish the job and try and finish as high as we can and really push those last two games or whenever we get a chance to play them and push into that European position, then you know what an achievement that would be. But we'll wait and see on that. But as a whole, you know, I think we're satisfied. I think the players have given a really good account of themselves. And you know, we just hope we get the chance to hopefully finish off all the hard work that's went before and really you know, finish off and give the supporters you know, some more good days and something to really look forward to next season.
It perhaps wasn't noted as much as it should have been, but to lose guys like Devante Cole and James Scott, who was perhaps at the peak of his powers before he left the club to join Hull City in the January window, that's a very tough one. Losing James in particular on deadline day, that must have set you and the manager back somewhat in terms of providing a real headache up top.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think it's you know, I had experience of it as a player at Motherwell throughout my career as well, and the kind of coaching side of it as well. And you know, that's just what it happens. You know, that's just our club. It's not something that we moan about, or you know, you ever hear the manager moaning about. It's just, you know, being the manager of this football club and being a coach, part of your job is to develop players, and you know, particularly in James's case, obviously, you know, it's a real part of the DNA of the club, and it always has been. As I say, throughout my time as a player, and yeah, you know, was there ever frustrations there throughout my time as a player? And you always felt, you know, if you keep that team for one more season, or if you keep, you know, 2 or 3 players for another season, you know, could you really push on again? And you know, the answer to that question is probably yes. But the reality, the harsh reality of it, is if we did keep doing that, we probably wouldn't have a football club to go and support every Saturday. You know, so it's, you know, the club thriving and continue to develop that model, if you like, is built on, you know, deals like James and whatnot. And you know, we wish him nothing but the best, and very proud of, hopefully, of to played a small part in his development. But you know, as I said before, it's what keeps our club going and you know, helps us develop more players, bring through more of our own players. And you know, I think that's what we all want to see, what the supporters want to see. And you know, it's just part of the course, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And you know, we just got on with it, and it's our job now to you know, adjust to that. And I think we've been trying to do that. And you know, we look forward and, you know, we try and find where is the next James Scott, where is, you know, the next product coming through the system. And, you know, that's what we continue to try and do. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, but it's one that we, you know, we're excited about and one we want to try and, you know, try and continue as much as we can.
And while James Scott left the club, a lot of us, in fact, all of us were absolutely delighted to welcome back David Turnbull in the weeks leading up to the fixtures being halted. Davey also signing a new contract with the club as well. A real demonstration of his commitment and how devoted he is to Motherwell Football Club. Of course, with his contract kind of winding down and the interest from Celtic in the previous summer, there was going to be a lot of speculation surrounding his future. That gives the club somewhat of a safety net, doesn't it? That they're not going to lose him on the cheap, a player that has clearly got all the attributes to go right to the top.
Yeah, he has. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt. And I think, you know, going back to what we were saying there about the club's model, what is important is you try and protect your assets. And, you know, I think Alan Burrows and the club have been, the manager, obviously, you know, I've been good at doing that. You know, if it is again for our club to thrive, we've got to do that to make sure that we're, you know, getting the value that we deserve out of these young players that we've invested. You know, like the players themselves take obviously enormous credit, but, you know, I think the players themselves will be and often are the first to turn around and say how much Motherwell have been a part or a massive part of their development, you know, throughout the whole academy. Obviously, Stevie Hamill and Clarkie and you know, the guys at the academy, you know, putting a lot of you know, unseen hours, effort all the way through that process from, you know, 8-9 years old sometimes, and all the way through, you know, obviously to then we get them at that kind of first under 20s first team level. And there's a lot of commitment, a lot of hours, a lot of dedication to these young guys, you know, which we get back out absolutely, as you see in David's case and the vast majority of cases. So, you know, it is a two-way thing. And, you know, we're delighted that David signed on again. You know, his talent is undoubted. You know, he's, I think MD that saw from the, you know, the documentary, fantastic documentary that Grant and Laura and Ali and everyone put together on the media team. You know, again, an indication of David's strength, mental strength as well throughout his whole rehab, which, you know, it can be difficult at times in terms of the repetition and kind of Groundhog Day feel of a long-term injury, which I went through myself, and that can be tough at times. So, you know, David's showing all that grit and determination that he knew he had, and, you know, you see that now that he's back out in the grass, and, you know, we knew it was going to be, you know, he wasn't going to come straight in, and, you know, the nature of the injury was going to be a little bit of a slow burner on the way back out of the injury, and, you know, that's how we were managing them, and but there's no doubt in my mind that David will get back to really fulfil and show that the player and potential that he's got, because, you know, in my mind, certainly before his injuries, he's certainly one of the best young players that I've saw over my time in Scottish football, and to me, a boy that can really go all the way to the top.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the players just now, what are they doing to keep themselves ticking over? I know it must be exceptionally difficult to monitor things like that. And you can see certain players on social media clearly working hard to keep up that fitness. But with the kind of team camaraderie taken out of the mix, how difficult is that to manage and kind of almost manage the players mentally during this time?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's something new, something, I mean, you're normally only ever really away from the players, particularly in Scotland now with the winter break. I mean, I think your summer break regularly, the players are really only getting about 4 weeks, I think, you know, depending on when you're coming back in terms of your, you know, the League Cup and when your last game is and things like that. But I think it's generally around about 4 weeks. So, I mean, that's the longest. I know we're only sitting at a couple of weeks now, but I think it's obviously going to be a lot longer. But usually in the summer, the players go away and you don't... I mean, they have little maintenance programmes, but you don't have much contact back and forward. Whereas this time, You know, with this, you know, break, it's, you know, we have been in regular contact with them, and you know, they do have programs, to individual programs to do. That's became a little bit tougher now with the government guidance in terms of the social distancing. You know, I think when they first gave them the programs, there was still an element that they were allowed to train in small numbers out in the open. But now, I think with the you know, the guidance now, it really is really on your own if you can, you know. So the guys have got, you know, some guidance from Andy Bowles, our strength and conditioning coach, who's done an excellent job in providing you know, programs and platforms for the players to access in terms of you know, their fitness and all different aspects of their fitness. And you know, the doctors there on call 24/7 in terms of their needs in a medical sense, you know, and we're all there really on call on a sense of their well-being as a whole, really. If anybody needs you know, to talk or some guidance on anything, really. And I think from among the players themselves, I think, you know, the 21st century has brought us a lot of different platforms in terms of communication, you know, while we're apart. And I think the players have been you know, certainly using that to the max in terms of their own group chats and Twitter and on their Xboxes and whatnot. So Instagram, and you know, the list goes on. So you know, I think they've been keeping in contact pretty regularly, and yeah, again, kind of trying to make the best of a bad situation. And in terms of the players' fitness and projections going forward, I mean, we can only really be guided by the league and by UEFA guidelines and things like that. So, you know, we're reviewing it constantly, and you know, that will continue to be the case. Obviously, as soon as we receive more information, you know, the players will be the first to know.
Have you managed to find anyone for a game of sensible soccer yet?
Unfortunately, I've inquired that none of the players have got a Commodore 64. I thought they might have, but none of them have even heard of it, never mind got one. So unfortunately not, but I'll need to start phoning. I might need to start phoning around some of the old players, see if they fancy a game instead of the young ones. But I think Tony and Big Decky seem to be leading the way on the FIFA, I think. So no, I'll leave them to it. But you know, again, just a different
one that I could get on board with. I think this could actually go quite far.
A wee retro, could have a retro retro games competition. But listen, another, in talking about Tony and Decky and things like that, but again, it's just another thing to keep connected, and you know, it's certainly a bit of fun in that regard, and I think any fun that you can have at the moment in this situation is welcomed. So no, good luck to them.
No, absolutely. It seems to have got the fans involved as well. And I think just a wee bit of a mental escape can be quite nice when you're cooped up and stuck with your own thoughts at times. So, yeah, certainly good on them. We talked before, and it's so uncertain as to what we're going to find out or what the next moves are going to be. But there's obviously concern that contracts are winding down as well. There'll be players that are out of contract, there'll be loan deals that will be scheduled to come to an end at the end of May. Are you hoping that there's going to be kind of clear guidelines as to what to do and legislation to protect the clubs here? Because there must be a distinct possibility that when football restarts, it could be teams with completely decimated squads or completely different squads to try and compensate for that situation.
Yeah, you know, I think it's probably you know, one of the main concerns. You know, I heard UEFA having another, I think, conference call with all the associations on Wednesday, and I think that's got to be high up the agenda for a lot of associations. I mean, I think we as a club individually, we, you know, always obviously project forward in terms of our squad, what the manager wants that squad to look like the following season, and making decisions on players, you know, that are obviously coming out of contract, contracts that we want to try and renew, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, most of these decisions were all kind of happening just as this thing happened. So it's so difficult now. I think, you know, most things are on kind of pause almost. Most of these decisions on players, who we want to retain and who we, you know, who we don't. And that's all we can really do at the moment until we get guidance, because to me it is one of the big factors. You know, if we then go on to, you know, I think everybody's first choice would be to complete the league, obviously, if we can, but if that's not going to be until July, August or beyond, you know, the vast majority of our players' contracts, the ones that are out of contract, run out on the, you know, at the end of May. So, you know, how do we then, you know, compensate for that? Do we sign them on short-term deals? Then the finance comes into that as well. Do we actually have the finance to then do that? So, I mean, these are all you know, decisions and all things that are going to have to be decided upon. And I think they're going to have to be decided upon sooner rather than later, to be honest with you. And that's why I think ultimately there's got to be some sort of guidance from UEFA, from the, you know, our own SPFL, SFA, you know, pretty soon, to be honest, because I don't think clubs can just, can, you know, go on without some sort of clarity in their thoughts, some sort of clarity in their, because, I mean, these are businesses at the end of the day, companies that have to continue are trying to project some sort of way forward in terms of their, you know, financial planning. So, you know, we are hopeful that we get some sort of guidance at in the near future, and it, you know, then hopefully be let us get on with that process of you know, whatever that may be, you know, of planning our squad and planning our you know, our budgets and things like that for the, you know, this season and next season and beyond.
We're obviously doing a podcast and basically focusing on the football, but there's obviously a much bigger picture out there, and the club have been doing their bit in terms of supporting the community. I believe yourself, you were involved in some of the calls to the elderly season ticket holders, which is a fantastic thing in terms of just checking in on our perhaps more vulnerable supporters and just making sure that they're doing all right. They give so much support to the football club. It must be a nice feeling to give that wee bit back.
No, it was, you know, I think a few of the players have been getting involved and, yeah, made a few calls. And listen, it's, you know, you're not on the phone for hours at all, you know, but it's just really phoning round and just a quick chat and just to see how, you know, how they are. And, you know, it's a really nice experience, actually. You know, you get obviously very different responses. Some, you know, some, you know, you end up on for a bit longer than others telling you about, you know, Motherwell winning the cup and, you know, back in the league back in the 30s and things like that. So you get a full range of stories, but it's great. You know, it's great. I mean, some of these supporters have been following Motherwell for 60, 70 years, you know, it's just incredible. So it's to actually have the chance and sit and have a chat and you know, as I say, go through a few of those old stories was a really, I think not just a good experience for them, but I really actually enjoyed it. And I think our club, our football club, not just our club, you know, I think there'll be a lot of clubs across the country. You know, I think it is the time to kind of step up and help in any way that we can. Yeah, I mean, the club, you know, we're certain aspects that the club themselves are struggling with, but I think our role, you know, can be community-led and really, you know, try and be there for people. You know, for instance, a gentleman I spoke to, he needed his prescription picked up. So, you know, I think, people are going to, as a club, are going to try and organise that. And I think, you know, for instance, any shopping and things like that. So it's just those type of things. It seems small, but, you know, matter so much to people in this situation that maybe just can't get out and about. Maybe the way they once could. And they've maybe not got a lot of family network round about them, which I think sometimes you always... you know, you take for granted that, oh, he'll be okay, I'm sure they'll get family around about. Well, actually, you know, some of the supporters I was speaking to never really had much of a network around them. So again, you know, hopefully that's when the club can step in and try and be of assistance. So, no, it was nice. I mean, I think, you know, hopefully we'll get round to, you know, phoning a few more maybe this week. And, you know, just as I say, helping any way we can in this, you know, times, which I'm sure for all ages are difficult. But, you know, as particularly, as I said, if, you know, you're maybe in that vulnerable group and you've not got a lot of, you know, family support around about you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really just the ethos of what a community club is and what it means to be a community club. And that's been evident in the way that the supporters have got behind the Well Society in recent weeks as well. The numbers have swollen past 3,000. Of course, it's a very uncertain time. It's a very difficult time for a lot of people. A lot of people experiencing real financial worries and worries about the future, whether that be in their employment or just kind of covering bills for the next couple of months. So to rally around the football club for those that are able to do so, that's a very significant thing and shouldn't be underestimated either.
Not absolutely not. You know, I think, again, we go back to when we first started in terms of the void that football's left. And I think, you know, the void that, in particular, Motherwell, you know, it can leave. I mean, it's played such a big part in people's lives. You know, it really, you know, again, going back to the conversations that I had, you know, when I was making the calls, you know, people, again, as I said, that have been following the club for such a long time that, even at, you know, the grand old age of, you know, some of the men and women were in their 70s, 80s, actually, most of them. And even at that age, it's still just the thing they wanted to speak about was just Motherwell, old memories and, you know, just the little stories all across the decades of just how much of a part it's played in their whole life, you know, from a young kid all the way through now to, you know, being in your 80s. And I think just the club means so much to so many people. And it is just such a big part of their lives that, you know, now, as I said before, the club doing whatever we can in terms of helping in a time of need in whatever way that may be, however small, however large. And it might not be a need in terms of something physical, but at least even likes of the phone calls from the players and things like that, it might be a conversation, it might just be a friendly voice to get through you know, a day that might just put a smile on a face that helps that day become a little bit brighter, that I think is so important. And I think, you know, on the whole, I think our club has been pretty good at that over the years, certainly since I've been involved in it. And, you know, particularly in these times, I think it's you know, more important than ever, really.
And many of us last night rounded off the world's longest weekend on record, by the way, despite the fact that it's an hour off. It still seems to go on for much longer. BBC Scotland showing the 91 Cup final in its entirety. I believe that you also were tuned in last night to watch it. It's amazing how many times I've watched it and still to this day I've never ever even get close to being sick of it. It's a typical Motherwell performance. The Cup was won. We then somehow managed to squander it, but then won it again the time. So it was.
It was actually funny. It was great to obviously, again, back to the 21st century. You can't watch a game of football without being on Twitter at the same time. And I'm guilty as the next man of that. But it was actually funny to see the amount of Motherwell fans saying that they still thought they might get beat, they might lose it, might throw it away, even although they knew the result. And I thought, oh, that brought a wee smile to my face. I thought, God, there's the epitome of being a Motherwell fan. Of you actually know the score of the game, but you're still thinking, oh, God, we could mess this up here. But hey, listen, it was brilliant. It was great. It's, you know, and one word I thought of after watching it was tackling. I just thought it was brilliant. The tackles were brilliant. And it's just it was so unusual to see. I'd forgot just how many it was only one booking in the game. I think Luke Nyholt was the only booking in the whole game.
About his 17th challenge as well.
I know, like the 17th knee high challenge. It was so that again was something that brought a wee smile on my face. It was great. It's fantastic. You know, Ali Maxwell, just unbelievable. You know, I was fortunate to sit at Ali's table at the Hall of Fame dinner earlier in the year, and you know, we obviously chatted about the game and things like that. But you know, now actually watching it again, you just think, God, yeah, you know, what a kind of heroic performance it was. You know, every time you watch it, you just think it's better and better. You know, the save right at the end, it's just amazing.
As well, like every
I know. I know, and then you think the thing I always forget is that John Clarke actually does him again, does him twice. You know, you always see the first one, but I think is it just before extra time, just right at the end of the game, he kind of bundles into him again. You know, same thing again. You just think, wow, it's just unbelievable. And then obviously Kirky popping up with a winner, but it's. Yeah, it was great. Jim Griffin, who obviously we still see on a daily basis, he does the college in at the club, and you know, seeing him out there as well, it's just brilliant, great to watch. And you know, the best thing of all, I think you see at the end is just the fans, the crowd all up sitting up on top of the barriers and all that, and it's just actually, it's goosebumps, you know, you actually just watching. Obviously, I wasn't there and wasn't involved in it in any sort of way, but I'm just sitting with goosebumps just watching it. And it's just a great watch. And, you know, it's I think it's still got to be, obviously, the best Scottish Cup final in history, I think.
It could have done nothing, very little to. But to whet your appetite for similar success. We've obviously come very close in recent seasons. We've had some really good runs, just falling short. But that must still be the target and the kind of the pinnacle that you could reach as being involved in the coaching setup.
It is, absolutely. And then I think watching it, even watching the game last night, again, and the scenes, particularly at the end, scenes at the final whistle, and you know, I've had the feelings in semi-finals as a player and as a coach now and a manager, but just the opportunity to have that in a final would just mean so much. It's the one thing, you know, I think we've spoke about it a number of times, but it is the one thing that, you know, you wish you could have done as a player. As you're saying, played, you know, finals and semi-finals, I think, but just never quite got the job done. And now as a coach, obviously the two finals, you know, getting to the two finals, but just coming up short. And it's, again, you just see the fans and what it means to them and what it means to everybody. And just to have the chance to just do that again would just be unreal, really. And that's the thing that drives you, you know, it's the thing that it's why we're here, it's why we do it. You know, we don't just do it for a job, and you do it because... you know, it's, as I say, it's something to do. It's you know, that's why we do it. We want to bring success to Motherwell, you know, and success is obviously winning something, you know. Yeah, you know, you want to finish well in the league and do as well as you can, but ultimately it's about winning things. And you know, if we could try and do that, you know, from a personal level, as being still part of the club would just be, you know, the pinnacle and something we're still, you know, still driving for and dreaming about that we can deliver it one day.
Just to finish off, I know there's been a lot of trips down memory lane when you've been on the podcast in the past, and I think just now we've only really got memory lane to go on because there's bugger all happening in terms of actual football just now. But I was just to finish, can you think of your highlight since you hung up your boots and moved on to the coaching side in terms of one game that really stands out? Can maybe even link it up in the description on YouTube and we can watch the highlights later on.
Do you know what? There's been a few, actually. You know, I think probably, I mean, more the cup finals were just something else, or certainly the semi-final. I think the Rangers semi-final, I think when, you know, Malty scored the two goals and that feeling, the manager getting sent off, and it's just so much happened in that game. Obviously, Big Boy having a kind of wee coming together with one of the Rangers players, and as I said, Malty's goal, particularly second goal, it just had everything, you know, and that emotion, and I think that just that feeling of knowing you're going to a final when that final whistle went, and yeah, it's not winning something, you know, ultimately you're in it to win the cup, but just that feeling at that moment to know that you were taking Motherwell, a part of a, you know, a team and a staff to take Motherwell to another cup final was just really, really special, to be honest with you. And again, you know, something that just whets your appetite, that you just want more of it, you know. So I think that's certainly up there. In terms of it, Fir Park, actually another cup game and one of the best moments I think I've had, probably as a player and a coach, to be honest, just as a moment in itself. And I think there's a photo of Flo celebrating as if he'd scored the goal. I'm sure you've maybe seen it online, but it's Carol McHugh's goal against Hearts and the volley. I think that was the quarter final. I think to get to the semi final, I think it was a couple of minutes to go, wasn't it? And Carol sticks one in the top corner. And again, just for that moment, that kind of 30 seconds, 1 minute, if you like, just that. Again, knowing you're taking back to Hampden, if you like, of going to Hampden with Motherwell again is just a special, special moment. So there's been a few, but I think they two in particular, Cannon McHugh and the Rangers semi-final are certainly up there.
Was Flo down there because you were about to bring him on?
Well, he'll probably tell you that. But no, listen, if we ever bring him on, it must be, I don't know, we must be trying to protect a 10-goal lead or something like that. I'm not sure. I think we're that's desperate measures. But no, listen, the celebration was great. Brilliant. That's a great picture, that, actually. We've got that in the club. But again, just raw, kind of raw emotion, I think, coming out of everybody. It was such a great moment.
Yeah, that was unreal. I doubt if he tried it 100 times again that it would find the back of the net, but thankfully on that occasion it did.
And you're right there.
Bedlam. Laz, thank you so much for this today. It's been really enjoyable and it's a nice wee distraction away from everything else that's going on right now.
No problem, Andy. And listen, take care. And, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later, although I don't know how, but sooner that sooner is going to be, but we can all get back to the football and getting back to what we love, and you know, hopefully we can provide a few more moments like we've just spoken about there in the near future.
Yeah, well said, mate. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back in the next couple of days. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Maybe I don't really want to know how you got engrossed, 'cause I just want to fly. Lately, did you ever feel the pain in the morning rain as it soaks you to the bone? Well, maybe I just want to fly, want to live but don't want to die. Maybe I just want to breathe. Side.
just want